lost the weight upon my shoulder. Now it's easier to walk. I can see the road before me. I am not afraid to fall.
Welcome to the Beautiful Shifts podcast today. We're excited. We have Rachel Barker.
Yes, Rachel. She was so fun to talk to and get to know. We just loved her.
I know. And she had so many, I don't know, wise things to say and so many lessons. We've never had someone on. We talk a lot about race and prejudice. She adopted a black, her son. I think he's 13 now. And so I was kind of new territory for me. And I feel like she did a really good job saying, you know, we're all trying our best and sometimes we get it wrong. And then when we get it wrong, kind of like when you know better, do better.
Yeah. She was really good with that. And I felt honored because she said this is the first time she's actually been on a podcast to talk about this specifically, like raising her.
She's been on podcasts talking about other things before. Yeah.
And she even, it was really cool, her whole story that I'm excited for you guys to hear about, just how the adoption came about. Like, it was really emotional.
We cried a lot. And actually, like when I was editing it, I kept hearing like sniffs. Aww. I'm like, okay, I can't tell if that was her or me or you.
I know. It was just really good altogether. So she kind of gets into the adoption side of things and then more kind of the racism and some of that he's experienced. But really, she's such a like giving people the benefit of the doubt. Like she's just really gives people a lot of grace. But this is just like her story and her experience of what she's experienced. And so I think she's just trying to like share that so that we can all be aware and just have a little bit more knowledge. Because just like she says, like you just said, like the when we know better, we do better.
Right. And I feel like she, I mean, you can just feel the love, obviously, she has for her child and how we all have. We all want our kids to be treated good and fair and not have bad things and mean things said to them. But I think this is such a different story when we're in a, you know, we're from Utah. It's not a very diverse place. And so I just learned a lot from her and her son's story. And he just sounds like such a great kid.
Yeah.
Like super cute. Super just loving and forgiving and lives in the moment. And we could all learn so much from him. And and then I think another fun thing she kind of brought up that we talk about at the beginning is she does this Galentine's Gala. And we had talked about wanting to go. We had saw it last year, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, but it looks really fun, but it's a benefit. And so she's just giving and thoughtful. And you can tell she just wants to help people and make the world a better place. And so anyway, it's a great conversation. I think you'll really enjoy Rachel and we just loved her.
Yeah, she was awesome. So thanks, Rachel. And we're excited for you guys to hear from her.
Yes.
All right. Welcome, Rachel, today to Beautiful Shifts.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Yes. Thanks for being willing to come on.
Yeah. We're super excited to talk with Rachel. If you follow her, you know, she's just like a bright, fun person. And I just feel like you share a lot of just awesome, uplifting content. And we're really excited about this conversation today. So I'm going to go ahead and read the bio that she sent us, and then we will hop into her story. So Rachel Barker is a seasoned motivational speaker with over 20 years of experience. It is her goal to motivate others to consider a better way of life and a more successful path using techniques she has gathered throughout her years in not only the nutrition industry, but through her own obstacles in life. Rachel created an annual nonprofit formal event called the Galentine's Gala, where women from all over Utah gather to honor a carefully selected recipient, as well as celebrating each other. Rachel has been married to her husband, Chad, for 30 years and is a mother of 5 children, 2 sons-in-law, a daughter-in-law, and 2 beautiful grandchildren. Her family is the nucleus of her joy. Rachel wants everyone to love their story, every single part of it. Her life's work is to use her voice for good and to encourage others to do the same.
I love that. So well, thank just you. A beautiful
thank you.
Description of a, like an awesome person. So
totally. Yeah.
I love that. And I've seen your like Galentine's before other people that have gone to it and, you know, posted about it. Like it looks amazing.
It's such a fun event. It really is. It's one of those that are just a super rewarding event.
That's really cool. So do you like you nominate someone to receive the award?
So in December every year we take nominations and we get, like we leave an email and I do have a committee, but usually the people that read the emails are actually just my family. We don't, I usually don't gather my committee until a little bit later, but I open the nominations and people submit those to me via email and we read through stories and it really is heartbreaking. In fact, it like I'm never the same when I read the emails, because every single email is a worthy recipient. Like it's, and the reason why I chose to only have one recipient instead of doing a foundation or whatever is that amount of money does so much for one family. It can do so much more than like separating it into, and with a lot of foundations, you don't know where the money goes. You don't know. And with this, I never really have tethers of what they do with the money. I don't. But a lot, like with the amounts of money that are raised, it can make such a huge impact. And so that's why we choose it to one nomination, and we narrow it down, and I read it to my, like our family all gets together and we read the emails and we cry and all the things. Aww. So,
wow.
And then the event, whatever money you make from the event goes to the
person. So in the ticket sales, the only thing that doesn't go to the recipient is the food. So we take $25 off that. So I sell the tickets for $100, $75 of every single ticket sold goes to the recipient. And then beyond that, we have donations. And then this year we did something different where we sold the sweatshirts and put the sponsors on the back. And so the sweatshirt sales like go towards that. There's like a lot of different pockets that go to the family. So if you just counted like the 170 or whatever tickets that are, you know, whatever, that gives them about $12,000 just like right off the top if I sell out, which we've been very fortunate. We have never not sold out. So that is so awesome. But yeah. And then we just get donations above that. So it just varies. The community is what makes whether like how good the event goes, because if they have a big community that rallies around them, usually those are the people that attend. And those are the people that like either give more or donate more. Sponsors are a huge part of it because we do this event on a $0 budget. Like it's throwing the biggest party that you could ever throw on a $0. Yeah. But I do collaborate with the Wild Oak, who's the venue. And so they provide that venue. But then everything on top of that, from everything from flowers to food to whatever, it's either collaborated or it has to come out of that sponsor money. So it's kind of carefully done, but it's really fun. Yeah. And we really have a good time doing it.
Yeah. So cool. Tell me, I was wondering, so is there a certain theme, or is it any person that is going through anything? Are you focusing on women, or just anything?
We've had them so let me just go through the different years. So the first year that we did it was right in the smack dab middle of COVID. And really the reason why I did it had nothing to do with this. I just thought, oh, well, we should throw some kind of beneficiary into that and make it a party. We were just so sick of being cooped up. And I reached out. So a gal that lives in Heber City owns that River Bottoms Ranch. And so she said, yeah, we can do the venue and then we'll just charge them for their dinner and let's just have a party and they can dress up however they want to dress up. And so that was the first year we did it. And that first year we did Savannah Be Strong, which is a little girl that's in the Davis County area that had childhood cancer. So she was our first recipient. And really that year we only auctioned off the cake. That's really like, we just raffled off the cake. Whoever wanted to donate towards that cake, that's what. And so it was kind of a minimal amount compared to what we then raised. And then the second year that we did it was this little boy in Bountiful, and he also had cancer. His name was Marshall. And their family had like just connections, and we did a silent auction. It kind of grew and grew and grew. And that year we raised $57,000 for that little boy. And then the next year it went to Elise Jones, who is a Utah.
We had her on our podcast. Yep.
So yeah, she was our third year, and she's attended this year. She didn't attend it, but she just like has always given and shows up. And I just thought that would be so fun to have her as our recipient. Awesome. And then this past year was a coach that coached for both. He coached for Northridge and then he later went on to coach for Ogden High School. And Sturry Productions did a film on him of he has ALS. And he, when we were reading this, it's kind of a personal story, but when we were reading through this, like there's so many sad stories. There's really no... Why do you pick this person? It really goes from like just a feeling of, and I wish that there was like some, like this and this, but it's not. I just picked them. At the very end of the day, I do have the say. We all kind of weigh in our, what we think, but this, so my dad had multiple sclerosis and he coached from a wheelchair. And so Eric's story paralleled my dad's story and more so my mom. So like, even though it went to their family, I think that so many times when these illnesses occur, the spouse or the mate or whoever the caregiver is, there's so much burden placed on them. They, mm-hmm. you don't even realize, like, they're getting a whole family ready and up and going, combing their hair, feeding them, making sure that their needs are met. And oftentimes, because the illness is its own personality in all of it, the caretaker kind of takes a side seat and they're going right. through so much, you know? And so we really wanted to honor Eric, but also his wife, Skye. And so that's kind of what we did.
That's
really cool. Well, I want to go next year.
I know. We should go.
You know what? So. And here's the thing I have to tell you. Everybody, I have a lot of residual people, the people that came the first year, go every year. And yeah. And if they can't come, it's like, oh, we were on a trip. Like Elise was on a trip this year. But they, it's, and when they go, I've had people, so many women come alone. Like, can you imagine getting dressed up in your prom dress and going to an event by yourself and not knowing anyone? Here's the beautiful thing is that I've stood from the rafters and watched these like little friendships like emerge. And I've watched them through the years. They've remained friends. There's businesses that have been like born of this. There are collaborations that people work together now. And they, like, it's the funnest thing to watch. And that little piece of bravery of going to something by yourself or just taking a chance on an event has proven to be like lifelong friendships. And I love that so much.
I love that.
But when we don't really do a huge, like, there's not a lot of talking. I thank my committee. I honor the person that we're there for. And then they dance. And they dance fun. Like no one's watching. And it's so fun. I'll have to send you guys some pictures because they're so
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, I feel like I followed. I feel like maybe did. I feel like there's a couple people we've interviewed that go to that.
I know. And I even feel like said we should go to this or something. But then I don't. Or maybe it was Emily because you're connected with High Fitness.
So Emily is like dear Emily, like every year. She has been a constant. She's a constant sponsor. And she actually, Emily was the connection to Marshall. The mom of Marshall was, from Bountiful. She was in her ward and, they were very connected with that family. And she said, I know you have a lot of nominees to choose from, but let me tell you about this family. And honestly, like her plea was a big factor.
Yeah. She's great. We interviewed her. One of our first.
She was early in it. Yeah. Cause Chantel's done High Fitness for forever. I started like about a year ago.
Yeah.
But
so fun.
Yeah. We reached out to Emily and she said yes to be on our podcast. So
she was really cool.
She really is an amazing person. Like I've been there since the start and, I was there Monday when they announced all their fun new stuff. So it's fun to have watched their community grow.
Yeah. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, that is super cool. I'm glad we talked about that.
And if you do, send us some photos and we'll include them in this post so people can see, visualize what this event is. I think that would be fun to share.
So, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, maybe right now, if you want to tell us anything more about you and maybe what you do, aside from your bio or elaborate on that.
Before we jump into the transition.
It's like the magic, the million dollar question is like, what do you do? And I'm I have not found an eloquent way to answer that. You know, I do a lot of affiliate marketing. I do, I think that I'm just a professional friend.
Nice.
That's what I do.
I love it. Yeah. You seem like a really fun friend. I said to Chantel actually earlier, I'm like, she would be fun to hang out with. Like, I feel like
we just talked and the next thing you know, it'd be like 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm like, it was just fun. Like, it was a great conversation. So
That's really good. And then did you grow up in Utah?
I grew up in Morgan. So my dad was the football coach in Morgan. He coached there like his whole entire career. And so, I lived there until the second year that I was married. And then I've lived everywhere. My husband's, due to corporate America, we've lived in Tucson. We've lived in Minnesota, Virginia Beach, New Mexico, back to Phoenix. And then we came home. So, we've been a lot of places.
Lots of places.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's really neat to experience different parts of the country like that. I think,
and they are
really
all so vastly, like even like demographically different, and also like culturally different. Like I have experiences all over, just kind of learning learn to meet new people, and just like reinstating that the majority of people, no matter where you go, are good. There's goodness no matter where you live.
I love that. Yeah,
I love that. It's a good reminder. Because it's true. All the places I've lived, I'm like, I'm so glad I lived there because I met such amazing people in such a different environment and different culture. And it's awesome. Good experience. And then, so how many kids do you have?
I have 5 children. I have 4 biological and then I have Noah, who is adopted. And so I have three that are married. Wait, do I have three? Three that are married. And then I have one that is in a serious relationship. And then I have Noah. He's 13.
Oh, 13. Mm. Okay.
Yep.
Cute.
That is awesome. Well, that's really fun. You're probably super busy and you're a grandma too. And
that's the best part. So I have to say that there's redemption in being a grandparent. All of the things you did wrong as a parent, you can be redeemed for as a grandparent.
Right.
And you can just love them and have fun with them.
Send them home.
Yeah, send them to their parents. Yes. That does sound really fun.
I was thinking my mom was a grandma at my age, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I could be a grandma. I mean, my kids aren't super old, and so, but it'll probably be in the next 5 years where I'm like, wow, I might be a grandma. That's crazy.
Wow.
So fun.
Yeah, that is awesome. Well, I think we want to talk about a little bit about your adoption with Noah and your experience with that. So did you adopt him when he was a baby?
Yes.
Or was he older?
He was 5 weeks old when we adopted him. So kind of a funny story. Like it's when I always knew that I would adopt, like it was something that I wanted to do, like as a little child, like as a child, I knew that, that this would happen for me. And I know that that sounds so cliche. People always say that, but it really was, it was something that I always knew that I'd do. And, when Haiti, the earthquake in Haiti happened, I had a friend that was, part of a lot of different people that were going to take a plane in and get like those people from that orphanage, the kids that were there. And so we had to do an expedited like background check, FBI check, all these things. And we did everything like in the span of like 6 days, because we were planning to go over and then, you know, bring a child back. And, you know, we discussed it with our family, with our extended family and our little immediate family. My oldest at the time was only 15. And when this started, when, you know, we were going to do this, but I don't know if it's the governor or whoever governs Haiti, he came out literally days before we were to leave and said, no child will leave Haiti without paperwork. Well, there's not a lot of orphans that have paperwork. They just don't. Yeah. And so we were already that way. And we came back to our family and said, like, do you want to do this? You know, and at the time I was working part-time at a medical office, and my husband was just kind of, you know, at a different part of his career. He'd started with a new company. And so we weren't like hugely like financially well off. And so that $28,000 was not going to come out of nowhere. Like we were like, what are we going to do? And so we did little fundraisers, like every single, my little kids sold pizza cards. We did fundraisers. I picked up extra shifts. We did everything. And it was so amazing to watch that the exact amount like manifest. It was, I can't even. So when we originally got with, we were matched with a mom, and she abandoned that adoption plan. And then I kind of was at the point where I'm like, I can't emotionally do this. Like my husband's just like, I can't stand to see you sad all the time. Like we can't do this anymore. And I was at football practice for Andrew was 7 at the time. And I was just sitting at his soccer practice, and I missed a call, and because it was from my agent, and I just couldn't take the bad news. Yeah. So I said, okay, I'm going to let it go to voicemail, and you know, I'll revisit it when I can mentally handle it, you know? Well, every Wednesday I'd take my kids to Cine Mini Day. We'd go before school and we'd go get Cine Minis. And I was at Cine Mini Day, and it was early. Like it was early, and my agent called again. And I'm like, I wonder what's going on. So I took the call, and she says, can you travel tomorrow? There's a little boy that his mom is 14. She got pregnant at 14 and had him at 15. And she was 5 weeks into this journey, and she just couldn't do it anymore. And she like was just somebody that she had talked to for a while that like had been on and off, you know, deciding whether she wanted to, you know, put him up for adoption. And I'm like, yeah, I can travel. And so because I had my 4 kids at home, my husband stayed, and I flew with my adoption agent to Portland, Oregon. And such a crazy, I've never told this story. Like my family knows it. And so it's like, it's an interesting story. But when we got there, the mother of Noah, which like, this is a story that he like maybe will one day see, but he doesn't know this part of the story. But, so we got there, And we made contact with the mom. And of course, you have to get a notary and you have to get a person that's going to explain all of this information aside from my agent. You have to get a third party and you have to get a notary to come in, one that represents the state of Oregon, one that represents, like, so it's kind of a big deal. Like, it all had to be kind of thrown together. And then you face the ICPC. Is that ICPC concept? It's like an interstate compact agreement where you can't leave the state until it's finalized through the state of Oregon. Wow. And so I'm just like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. Like, I'm hoping for the best. So we get there and we make contact with this girl. Now, keep in mind, she acts just like you would envision a 15-year-old to act, but she has a baby. And so we are like, hey, what time do you want to meet tomorrow? We need to meet somewhere public. And these are the people that are going to be in the meeting and blah, 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 blah. And she's just like, yeah. Like, really not a lot of, like, she didn't, and I get it because she was 15, but, so my agent's really nervous. Like, she's trying to stay calm, but she's just like, oh, I hope she doesn't,
this might not go.
And you've invested a lot and all these things. And it's what every single adoptive parent faces. Like, that mother can change their mind at any moment and they have every right to change their mind at any given moment. But so we get there and we go pick her up because she doesn't have any, she doesn't drive. And she was living with her grandparents at the time and her mom was there, but kind of not really in the picture. Her grandparents were like the stability, right? And the baby, and she was staying with these grandparents who were like about 74 at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, mm-hmm. they've got this, you know, 15-year-old granddaughter that's living there with her son, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we meet her and we go pick her up and we meet at this like local like coffee shop. And my person is like the person that's trying to explain her rights and all the things that's going on. And like when you're in this like fight or flight, I'm over there, my nervous system cannot even calm down because I'm just like, what is going to happen? And they're explaining everything and every single thing. She didn't look up from her phone. She was just sitting there like texting on her phone. And they're like, uh-huh. Do you understand what's being read to you? Do you understand? Like, this is a big decision. Like, this is a, you know, and every time she looked up, yeah. Just sign that portion. And I was just like, I don't think she's understand. Like, I was so worried she wasn't understanding the levity of what she was doing. Well, it was all done. The paperwork was signed. As soon as it's signed and notarized, I now am the guardian. I'm the guardian of this child. So my adoption agent says, okay, where can we go get this? You know, where are we going to pick up the baby or whatever? And she calls like the grandma. And she's like, oh, so she had told this father of the baby the entire pregnancy that he was the dad, the whole entire pregnancy. And so he was also, I don't know how old he was, but he was older than she was because he drove and everything. And, but she never told him, yeah, I'm tapping out. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to give my child up for adoption. Meaning at the time, your child up for adoption. She never told him. Mm. So what he did is he fled with him. He took him and he left. Gosh. And so we, at that time, it was just like, okay, no one panic, but paperwork is done. We're here like this, whatever. And she's like, I don't know where he is. And she was not as nearly as concerned as the rest of the people in the room. Like all the rest of us are like, oh no, like what's happening? And I didn't know what rights were. I didn't know what to do. And so we called the local, where we were, the local police department. They're like, well, that's a kidnapping. We have to. Oh, wow. So they had to do an APB across the whole state of Oregon. And basically it's like, hey, this is, and I don't remember if there was an Amber Alert at that time or if that came later, but it was roughly the same thing that they do when an Amber Alert happens. They alert all of the police departments or whatever. Oh, wow. And so I'm on this, I literally had a little Nokia flip phone and I'm texting my husband and he's like, I cannot talk to you right now, but what is going on? And I'm like, oh, you know, like this is happening. And so it was hours. It was hours that we were driving around. She goes, like, she was in the front seat. I was in the back seat. And I'm letting kind of my agent handle everything because I don't know what to do. I have no idea what's going on. And so she's finally gets him on the phone and she's like just cussing him up and down, like, I can't believe you, da 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 da. And so she finally convinces him to take the baby back to her grandparents. And so we get there and my agent specifically tells me this. do not get out of the car. And I was in the back seat, and we were like, it was a nice area. Actually, it wasn't like, I didn't feel unsafe in the area at all, but right. she specifically said, basically, let me handle this. Well, we were parked kind of like on the side of the house. So we were parallel to the house. And in the back, I was looking in the rearview mirror. I could see this boy come out, and he was like putting, like slamming the stuff on the curb, like pack and play crib. And just slapping this. And he was just like sobbing.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking, like, what if, like, you literally got information, you invested in this child, you thought this child was yours, and it ended up paternity ways. It wasn't his. And that's a different story. That's a completely different story that I don't feel comfortable sharing because it's,
yeah.
But I will say this, I was a huge part of OUR for a long, long time. And there was a reason why, but, so he's back there, and I'm watching him in the rearview mirror, and I'm just like, she told me not to get out of the car, you know, and I can hear my husband in the background going, like, you know, like in my ear going, don't get out of the car. Just like, please don't be you for just a minute. Just don't be you. And so I get out of the car, and when you are doing an adoption thing, you make like a baby book or a book to give the, like at the time it wasn't digital. So you didn't make a digital scrapbook. It was still pretty paper. Like, so you made, oh, can you see the ear of my cat? Okay. Anyway, oh, no. she has to be a part of my life. No, all the time.
She can. It's but, fine. Yeah.
But I'd made this little book, and basically it's like, you're trying to sell yourself to this adoptive family, right. Like that they're like, they why you? Yeah. And you know, mm-hmm. we are the whitest family you've ever seen in your life. And they're not. And so he's sitting there, and I get out of the car, and I just was sitting there. He kind of got something stuck on the curb. And so I was trying to kind of help him, like, and I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, this is hard. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I go, but I can't make you any promises of like, what your future is going to look like, but I can make you a promise of what his future will look like. And I promise you, I will guard him with my life. I will take such good care of him, and I will give him all the things. And it's not about like money or anything. It's, there's going to be a time in your life that you're going to be able to redo this, and you're never going to forget him. Like, basically just trust me. I'll take care of him. I'll do all the things. I'll be the best mom. And like, he was sobbing, and I'm hugging. I see my adoption agent come out the door. Well, that didn't go well. But yeah. I feel like it was a little bit of closure. And so, like, she still wasn't done in there. And so I got back in the car, and I was like a mess. And I couldn't help but. And so they asked me, do you want to press charges? And I'm like, I don't. I don't want to press charges. He did what any like 16 or 17 year old person would do, given the same information. Like he did exactly what he would do. So I get in the car, and I'm sitting there, and it seems like forever. Like, I'm just like, it has been a really long time, you know? And finally, like, I can still see them coming kind of off the porch and towards me, and they have the carrier, but my one's holding the carrier, and then one's holding him. And so they came to my side. The one lady came to the side and put the carrier in. And I don't know who this person was. I don't know. I don't know if it was my birth mom's mom. I don't know. I didn't know how to place that. And so, but then on the other side, my adoption agent opened my door and handed him to me. And you guys, he looked up, and he looked at me and said, oh, there you are. I've been waiting for you. Like, there you are. And he looked like a little mini Stanley from The Office. That's exactly what he looked like. Like, he had these big, he did not miss one meal. He had these big cheeks and little afro. He looked just like Stanley. Like, and he just looked up at me and just like, and I put him in his little car seat. And so for the next little bit, my adoption agent stayed for that next night with me. And then my husband was able to come in it was a Sunday. So I have to tell you a little bit of that story. Chad was never fully bought in on this idea. It was like hard. Like, it wasn't that he was like, oh, this is a bad idea. He's just like, this is hard. This is going to make my, like, life is going to be harder with five kids, with a child that doesn't look like the rest of the kids in Utah, that there's not a lot, like, he knew the hard. And I felt like this whole time, like, just like, trust me, and he knew how badly that this was my thing. And we'd like, he just had to go. So we went, I went and got him from the airport, and it was late because he had to come in, like it was later. And, I went to get him, and he was putting his bags in. I'm like, shh, he's like asleep or whatever. And so he gets, and he like opens the car door, and he just starts to sob. He's just like, oh, he's like, I never knew that I'd feel like this. And he like, I never knew that I would be able to like love something instantaneously. And it just, they're like, I would love to say that I'm Noah's person, but Chad is Noah's person. So I'm the advocate and I'm the fighter for fighter for all the things, but Chad is his person. And he is the most patient human being that has ever, like, you got to understand, like when you have, you know, Noah comes with a set of like circumstances that were beyond my control. I don't know what the mom did when she was pregnant. I have an idea, but we don't know exactly. And so he does have all those things. Like he does have ADHD. He does have some struggles, but the one thing that he has always had is the ability to live in present time. He lives only in right now. And this is, it's like a phenomenon. I don't even understand it.
Yeah, but let's people have a hard time doing that.
Yeah.
But let's say that his birthday's tomorrow. You know, most little kids like, my birthday's tomorrow. Oh my gosh, my birthday's tomorrow. And they're so excited. Same with Christmas, same with Easter, mm-hmm. all the things. I would wake Noah up tomorrow and say, happy birthday. Oh, today's my birthday. Like he lives like only in the present time. And so he doesn't really have anxiety. He doesn't fear a lot of things. He's scared of the dark. But other than that, but there's like not a lot of things that he is like, oh, I'm worried about that next week. I'm not like, he just doesn't. He lives only in right now. And so when you get upset with him or mad at him, he gets so upset right in the moment, but has instant remorse, instant forgiveness, and moves to the next. Just like that.
We could all learn from him.
Yeah,
exactly. That's so what has happened. So in all of the thing, he has literally been raised by a village, because at the time my daughter she had turned 16 and she had all her friends. And then he had all junior high friends. And my son, my other son that has football players, my husband helped coach, and he was at every practice, every game, and they called him Noah. Hey, Noah. But at the time he didn't know how to say his name, so he called himself Woa. He couldn't say the N. Oh, so they shortened his name to Woa. Hey, Woa. Oh. And so to this day, there's people that have been off their missions that are now getting married that are like, how's Woa? And you know, and so it's, he was raised by a community of people that just adored him.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow. That whole story.
I know. I was like,
we were both emotional. Yeah. That was amazing. Yeah.
But it's so beautiful at the same time. And just all the emotions. I mean, the emotions of the, who thought was the birth father. Like I could, that's so heart wrenching.
Yes.
And then almost like you're kind of, I mean, it made me think, oh, I'm kind of happy that he wasn't the dad. So it's not so hard.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, but at the same time, that's hard to think you have a kid, think it's getting up for adoption and then realizing it's not your child. That whole thing is hard. That poor, you know.
Yeah. I just felt for him. Yeah. But here's the caveat of all of it. She went on to have a baby with him.
Aww,
another baby. Okay. And she asked if I would adopt her. And we went to adopt her, and she realized that she would be getting no money. So the first adoption, they were able to reimburse. They were able to reimburse all of the costs, you know, because that's like, and so we were going to go travel to get this little girl, me and my other daughter. And when she realized that she would get no money, she fled and left that little girl with her grandparents, who then at the time were 76, because this girl would have been 2 years difference of Noah. Mm-hmm. And that little girl ended up that, you know, the grandma called me and asked me, what would you do? And I said, you need to get guardianship. Otherwise you'll have no rights. You'll have no rights to be able to tell her. And she says, well, how do I, you know, give it to her? And I said, I don't know if that's possible at this juncture with all that they had to jump through as far as like the states. And later on, she ended up getting adopted with another child that lady had. So she did get to stay in the same family, the same parents, but the same family as the other adopted child. But the crazy thing to do is the grandma, which I never know what's going on. Like I'll randomly get, I held open a blog spot that she can message. And every so often I'll look on there, I'll get an alert because it's been so long. I'll get an alert and there'll be an updated picture. And the second little girl looks identical to Noah. I show him and I said, who does that look like? And he is like, it looks like me. And I'm like, it's so interesting to like a turn of events that have happened.
Yeah.
But, and I know one day he's going to want to like look those people up. And I've tried to keep any questions he's ever asked me. I've been completely transparent. I don't give more than he asks because I think that that's really important to be on his time, to be on Noah's time, to want to ask those questions. But I've been completely honest. Any question, and I think this happens with a lot with adoptive moms, is I get it. You're threatened with a relationship that they're going to have with the birth mom, because like, oh my gosh, what if they just find that that's a better fit, or what? Like you have all these fears, all these very very real fears.
Right.
But I think it does way more damage to not foster that curiosity and foster the relationship, because at the end of the day, his DNA is theirs. Like we can try to like do the nurture, the nature versus nurture, but you're going to always wonder like who you look like, where you came, how, you know, like all the things. Yeah, and so I've tried really, really hard to keep that for him. And he asks very simple questions like, I wonder if my mom will like this, like my birth mom liked this. And it's usually in like, you know, he doesn't want to eat what he's eating. He'll say,
it's because I blame my birth mom.
Like, I actually just don't like this. But so, they're very simple questions, and he's always so satisfied with the answer, like very satisfied with the answer.
I think it says a lot about you that he feels comfortable asking the questions, you know, cause you've obviously made it an open environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That he feels he can. And I think it's kind of like a lot of things. I had never thought of it that way, but keep it age appropriate to what he's ready to hear.
Exactly.
I mean, it's kind of like other subjects with kids that are a little bit more, you know, delicate or whatever. Like you don't want to give them too much because it's just going to overload maybe what they can emotionally handle right now anyway. But then eventually when he gets to the point he wants to know more, and, or if he even does, you know, then he can. So,
and anyway, I think another thing too with Noah, that is like the stigmas that are attached to, I mean, Chad and I'm 5'5" and my husband's 5'11". He'll say on a different day, but he's 5'11". And we have this, and all of our kids are like, you know, they're appropriate to our size. And then we have this kid that we can't keep him in shoes. We can't keep him in, like every 5 minutes we're getting new, like new pants and new. And I'm just like, I feel like I'm raising Clifford the Big Red Dog. Like I just like, I get here and then, and it's just like he right now is 13 and he's here and he's got these huge shoes and it's just so out of our, like our element. And, but he, like people, they don't realize what they're saying when they say stuff like this, like, oh, are they gonna, is he gonna be your retirement plan? And you're just like, is that really a question you ask me? And they don't, I don't think that they realize the, like what that means or what that looks like. Or they'll say, you'll be in an elevator and you'll all be together and they'll say, where'd you get him? And it's usually an older generation, usually the older generation, like they just, I don't know if they lost their filter or if they never had it, but I answer
a little bit of both. I think.
Yeah.
I answer the same way that it was given to me. I say, I got him at Walmart. It was a buy one, get one free. And I got him. And then they realize by you like
joking back a little bit,
that was not a cool question. And they usually will apologize, but I don't want to make it like, I try to make it a teaching moment, but as lightheartedly as I can.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's a good idea. Cause you could easily just take offense and say like, why would you say something, you know, and be mad.
Right.
But instead you're kind of like, okay, are you serious? Well, I won't be super serious, but you'll realize maybe.
But it is, it's usually recognized. And so contrary to stigma, Noah does not love any kind of sports. He loves the mountain bike and he loves like archery and shooting and like a lot of car stuff, like Chet, and that's all Chet, my husband. He could tell you the engine in a car, the year it was made, by the sound of the engine, loves cars, which my other son didn't really love cars like Chad. Chad loves cars. He can tell you all about them. In fact, once a month, like in the summer, they do like this, they call it a Mustang run. And I don't go to that. Noah goes to that.
Not my thing.
They go and they meet and they see all the other Mustangs. And so I think it's so cute that like, he's established what he does like, and he's totally fine. He's totally fine saying, hey, do you want to do this? I don't. Like, we've had him in soccer and t-ball and football and all these things, and it's just like, not my thing. And it's just like, he doesn't have an aggressive, like, to be aggressive, like, to do. And it's the cutest thing, because he would never, like, physically go tackle somebody, because that would hurt their feelings. Like, that would be something. Right. And so when he was playing football, it was the cutest thing, because he was like, you're in little league and he's twice the size of everybody. They're always like, let's check the birth certificate. And I'm like, I assure you that's not needed. But what he was coached by these cute little high school kids, and they are like, okay, let's try to find some way to utilize him. And so what they told him to do, he'd be on the line. Okay. When that ball's hiked, just go, like, and just run towards
the scare people.
And the quarterback would usually fumble or do something. And I'm like, he wasn't going to tackle you, you silly. Yeah. There's no intention.
He's too sweet.
But so he, it just is kind of cute. But that, like, he just is a very, like, he really loves people. He's so forgiving and all of the things. And so I know that one of the things we talked to prior to this podcast, and what may, like, probably caught your eye, is a post that I did on what happens in schools, the unfortunate part of being a minority in a community.
Yeah, that's great. We'll read that, and then that will kind of lead to that portion of the conversation.
Yeah, talk about, and I followed you, and I just thought you were cute and saw the Galentine stuff, and then one day I saw that post, and it made me, I don't know, I just felt so much emotion and love that you have for your son, and just empathy for him, and but not even, I don't know, you did a really good job. So we'll read that, so the listeners can also. Okay, it says, no one can see what you see, even if they see it too. And that's an anonymous quote. And then you write, no one prepared me for the good I'd see in people, nor the bad. No one prepared me for the joy. No one prepared me for the heartbreak. No one prepared me for any of it. Some days I'm in awe of the beauty in this world, and some days I'm appalled by its darkness. I remember when I was very young and I was watching the news with my grandpa, and he mumbled something so offensive under his breath, thinking I didn't hear him. It is nothing I would ever repeat, even in quotes. My grandfather was not an unkind man. On the contrary, he was a kind and gentle man. He was just born in an era of extreme prejudice. I remember looking back at him after his comment in utter shock and replied, "We all bleed red." I had no idea how many times that sentence would play over and over in my mind throughout my life. I will never know how it feels to be judged by the color of my skin. The closest I've come to being disregarded by what I look like is my weight, and now by my age, and it's not the same, and it's hardly comparable. It's happened so many times now that you'd think we would be numb to it. We are not. He is a much better person than me. He forgives quickly. I do not. These infractions are not politically driven, and they are not part of any agenda. They are cruel, and they are wrong. I will never know what it feels like to be him, but I know what it feels like to love him. His blood is red as mine and yours. He is mine, and I am his. You offend him and you offend me. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. I disagree. I believe they do know, and they need to do better. My apologies for the ambiguity. This is not my story to tell. It is his. I can only share my side and provide my voice. Words matter. Once they're out there, they can be forgiven, but they cannot be redacted. And then Nelson Mandela says, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate, and if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Hmm. So, wow. Beautiful.
Yeah, really.
Thank you.
And then there's just a beautiful picture of you hugging your son.
Yeah.
As so part sweet. Of the post. Yeah. So.
We were in New York, and I, like, the reason why I chose that day is that, like, he had made a comment. Like, we were sitting there watching this guy in the middle. We were in Washington Park, so we were just, like, watching, there's a lot to watch, but we were watching this guy, and he had all these, one was playing the piano and the other guy behind him was collecting all these birds. But he was saying that, like, the birds don't care what he looks like. Like, he just was uttering just a complete, like, just, I call him a noahism, just, oh, the birds don't care what he looks like. And he, like, these birds were everywhere. Like, and it just is like, I love that he's so very well aware of what's going on around him, but he takes nothing personally. He really doesn't. Like, he, and I just don't know why he doesn't. I want to, like, that's my biggest thing with him is, like, why doesn't he take things personally? Like, I don't understand why that is, you know? And so anyway, but, so just to kind of lay some context to that post, Since Noah started school, this is in elementary and junior high combined. That is the 8th time that that there's been an infraction, or, you know, at the school. 8 times in, you know, since first grade to, you know, 7th grade that I've gotten a call from the school saying, hey, this happened. I never one time heard from Noah that it happened. It always came from the principal or the vice principal calling to say, hey, this happened at school. How do you want to proceed? And usually the typical like way to do that is to they call it out. The person's called in. The parent, both the parents on both sides are alerted of what happened. And then we, then it can go to a district level. So like the school level will do like so much, but then it'll go to like what they call a district level. And we, there's not a lot that like is done there, except for like it's mulled over and you know, we'll send you after a while, you'll get like an email saying like, oh, this is what we decided. And it sounds like a really good process. But the problem is in that process, it doesn't seem personal at all. It seems very much like, so I'm just going to use one of the scenarios, and I'm not going to mention a school or whatever. So one of the scenarios is Noah was going into art class. And this is when he's been older. He's going into art class and they had to make a diorama of like whatever habitat that they wanted to, you know, do the diorama of. And so he walked into class and, somebody had made a diorama and there was a gorilla in the bottle. It was like a mason jar, you know, you tip it upside down and it has the like diorama in it. And there was a gorilla in a bottle. And one of the kids says, oh, look, it's Noah. And, the art teacher heard. Many students heard, and the principal told me when they called, or the vice principal told me when he called, he's like, I don't know if Noah heard. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure if 4 other students heard and the art teacher heard, I'm pretty sure that Noah, but I waited to see if Noah would say anything. He didn't say anything. How was school today? Yeah, it's good. It's fine. Like whatever, like anything. What was your, I always say, what was my daughter Grace always says, what was your peach and what was your pit? And I says, what was your peach and what was your pit? And always lunch is his peach. And pit is that, like, he doesn't love the learning part of school, but he loves the social aspect of school. And so, I said, well, I got a call today from Mr. So-and-so, and they said this happened. I said, did you hear that? Maybe. All I said, maybe. And so later on, we talked about it, and he just wants it to go away. He doesn't want to belabor it. He doesn't want to talk about it very much. He just wants it to go away. And so that time I just felt like, okay, like I wanted to know what the process looked like. I said, does that kid have to apologize to Noah? Does like what goes on? And he says, well, he doesn't have to, but like, you know, whatever. And I asked Noah later if he did apologize, and he said he did. And then what it does is it goes to that district level. And then a little bit later you get a, like a very templated. The reason why I know it's templated is because I got the exact same email, like, and the beginning of the email says is we as a district have decided that this was a racial harassment. You're like, oh good. Well, I'm so glad y'all agree. So, and basically like the proper things have happened. You know, if you have any questions, call here. And you're like, I got a lot of questions, but most of the time they can't tell you, they won't tell you what the kid's name is. They won't tell you like what's been done. Instead, they'll say, we have a lot of resources for you. We'd love to give you this book and this counselor and this person for you guys to talk to in how you feel about being bullied. Okay.
Interesting.
Fair enough. Okay. Fair enough. So you wait about 3 months. It's about 2.5 months. And there was like some kind of commotion in a classroom, and this kid had taken his friend's hat. And Noah was just like, give his hat back. Like, give his hat back. I want the hat back. And he's like, leave me alone, you monkey. Same connotation, same whatever.
Yeah.
Teacher heard, student heard, call from the principal or the vice principal. And I just was like, and this time I was mad. Like I didn't react very well. Yeah. I said, what juncture you know, I don't need any more resource or pamphlets on my behalf. Are these resources being given to the people that keep using this, you know, doing this? And I asked, I said, well, what kind of education is being done in what these racial slurs look like? In comparing that to an animal or whatever? And I said, how specific are you? Like, I know that sometimes there's some kids that you need to say, hey, maybe it's unclear to you, but we will not do this anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Like, do not do this anymore. And he says, believe me, we are very, very, like, very candid. And so it beckons the question then, why does it keep happening? Well,
right.
I think that we, like, I think as a school district, I don't know if you know this, and this is like, you can look this up, you can find it on your own. I'm not gossiping or whatever, but Davis County School District had a huge lawsuit placed against them for these infractions.
Oh, wow.
And so they built a process to handle it and deal with it and do better. But the problem is like, are the parents being included? Because I have to say, if my kid did that, which believe me, my kids have made mistakes, and me as a parent, like, we just take on that shame. Like, oh my gosh, why did you do that? Like, whatever, we right. march their little butts over to apologize or whatever we have to do. But with race, they're so scared to do anything. They're just like, we'd rather just say nothing. Hopefully it'll go away. It was a mishap. And I'm like, or it wasn't. It's like, what do we do? And I don't have a lot of solutions. I wish I had more solutions on what we could do. But I promise you, handing the people that's being bullied the resource manual rather than one that is the bully the resource manual is maybe where we're going wrong.
Yeah.
Because I think that, like, I don't know. I wish that I had an answer and that I could tell you, like, how to solve it all. I don't. And I also know that, like, I've made mistakes and said things that I don't mean, that I've had to come back and say, oh my gosh, like, I was so wrong. And I also know that these kids are at an age where they are just so, like, everything's everywhere. Their hormones are everywhere. They say dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. They do not very, you know, do stupid things sometimes. But these kind of, like, these type of infractions are a little bit more heavily laden than if da 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 da. And then you add another little block to that. And one of the biggest things to Black people is their hair. Don't touch their hair.
Yeah.
They don't like their hair to be touched. It's like a very, like, sacred thing.
I mean, I don't want anyone touching my hair either. I can't imagine you feeling like that. You feel like it's okay to touch the hair just because it's different.
Yeah. And so, like, a lot of people will pat him on the head, or, like, because they want to know what it feels like or whatever. But there was a girl, and one day I got called from the school saying, hey, Noah, like, tapped his toe up against this girl, like, got, like, basically went up and, like, kicked her shoe. And you know, when you have kids and you would get that call and you're like, sounds about right, I'll be down there.
Yeah.
But with Noah, I'm like, okay, what happened between here and here? I need to know what happened between here and here, because that's not a common thing that he would do. And so, but that was an ask. It was like, hey, your son tapped her to like, that is an infraction. We don't ever lay our hands or anything on another person. And I just want you to know, we didn't send him to the principal's office because, like, you know, some story checked out, but I just want you to know. And I got home and he did not want to talk about it at all. Like, and which I'm like thinking, like, well, did you mean to do that? Like, what did you do? Like, why did you do that? And after a long situation, this girl was in three of his classes, constantly teased him about his hair, constantly teased him about his looks, constantly teased him about every single thing about him. Now, one would say, I know, but was that race directed? I don't care. I don't care if it was race directed. But what happened is, between that female situation, the female could sit and do that over and over again. And Noah basically got up and, like, his clown feet tapped into her shoe and said, I don't like that. And I don't want you to do that anymore. It was the first time he's really ever stood up for himself. And I said, well, what made you do that? He's like, it's every class, all three classes that I'm in with her. And she does it all the time. I said, well, did you tell your teacher? And he's like, no. I said, no, I like this is part of it. You've got, your voice is going to sometimes be the only voice. I'm not going to be able to be your voice all the time. And it's in those discussions. And I go, and on top of that, like, it's so frustrating, like, to not want to just put your fist through a wall, but like, we've got to do every single thing we can to contain it here and work through the proper channels. But quite honestly, can you imagine how frustrating that would be over and over again?
Over and over. Well, you do kind of hit your wall.
Yes,
you're just like, stop.
Exactly. Like, I don't want you. And that's what he did. He got to that point. He says, hey, I don't want you to do that anymore. And I don't like it. And so after hearing that part of the story, like through an email, that, you know, the teacher is just like, oh, I wasn't aware. And that's not his fault, but maybe some more questions could be asked. I think that even when we ask our kids, like we come home and, you know, something happened and we ask them and this one's not meeting this one, we have to ask different questions, maybe in a different way or whatever. And so it just, like, it's something that I just, right now, what is so funny is during this, interview that we're having, I got a call from the school, that 402 number. And my heart like always sinks. It's like a PTSD from, like, when I get a phone call from the school, it's not like, I just wanted to tell you that today was a good day. We had an amazing things happen and blah, blah, blah. Right. And so, but I'm not also one of those parents that think, oh, my kid never does anything wrong. They're always in the right. There's a lot of nuances that he has that I'm just like, dude, come on. You know, and so I'm not unaware, and I definitely am able to like admit my own like mistakes, because in my advocacy, I wish that I could be bridled, but a lot of times I can't. I just am. And, you know, my older son, one time said, like, my older son and I sometimes kind of butt heads. We're very, very similar. But he always says this. He says, you know, I'd really, really like you to always be in the principal's office with me. And that was like a huge compliment to me, because I can't.
Yeah, I
and even them. When I was little, because my dad was handicapped, and there's a lot of people that stared, and there's a lot of people that made comments, and there was a lot of people that thought that he wasn't competent or whatever. And I've always been a justice seeker. It's just in who I am. And so if anybody is not being treated fairly or kindly or being stood up for, it really does affect my heart. It really, like, it pulls at my strings. It's something that, and that's why I do what I do. I really, one of the things is I provide a voice for people that don't have one or have forgotten that they had one. And like for years and years, I was a CASA for the state of Utah. A CASA is somebody who works with the guardian ad litem. I've seen kids in protected states that were given back to parents that they should have never gotten those kids back. I've seen people that deserve to get their kids back. They've tried. They did the service plan. I've seen so many different scenarios, and it is a case by case scenario. It's not just a blanket statement where we just do a templated email and send it back to this parent that like shed real tears, that sat with their kid in this moment. And so I think that that's one thing that we could change is treat things like a case by case scenario and hear both sides instead of just like being a mouthpiece, comforting, going through your 10 step. Like, if the mom does this, you do this. If the mom does this, you do this. Like, I don't want to be part of a templated program. Nobody does. Yeah. It reminds me of a project or somebody that's just like, you know, when you call into a call center, if heated person says this, do this. And then like by step six, you sound the bell and get the manager to come over. You know, I just think that like we can go about it differently. And I would love to see that change. But quite honestly, I don't know how to do it. Like, I don't know I don't know how to make change, because there is this division in America right now that if you are trying to stand up for like treating people fairly, that you are, you know, believing in this agenda. If you're doing this and you're saying, hey, that's wrong, that's not cool, I don't like that, they're like, oh, you're part of that agenda. And you're like, actually, I'm not. I'm actually not a part of any agenda.
Sticking up for people.
I'm actually like part of my son's agenda. So like, I think that's something like that we need to take, is not to make these blind statements and to listen to things as they come and to do what we've asked a judge to do in the court of law, is to take everything, listen to the information, then make a judgment.
Yeah. Instead of making a quick judgment, thinking, you know, one side or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also make,
there's always two sides
and we always make quick judgments. I'm an emotional thinker.
Oh yeah.
I wish that I could take things and be better at it, but I do try to find resolution in all things. I am a solutions person, and I'm not unreasonable. unless a situation comes to the thing that just is like, wow, this is just not transpired like it should. And that little justice seeker in me comes out and, you know, that's what happens.
Yeah, I can see how when, you know, you get this just templated email where you're like, okay, you're not caring about my son or this situation just because it's happened before. It's not the same person. It's not, they didn't say the same thing. Like it should be, like you said, an individual thing each time that's treated as a separate thing.
Right.
Because then you, like you said, you're just handed a template and a, like an email and a pamphlet. And then they feel like, check, we did our job.
And your case is now closed. Please don't bring it up anymore.
Yeah.
So like we would like, we've handled this and it's over and we'd like you to be over it. We're over it. And so we'd like you to be over it. And you're like,
so you should be.
I'm actually not over it. Right. So, but it does, time does help things. And I think, but here's another thing that I think that, that like these situations have done, it's opened a conversation with us in our family, like in like saying, Noah, like, I love that you want this to go away and you want it to sweep it under the rug, but it's going to come out. Like, this is just that, like, I remember one of the times when he was little and there was a kid that like the principal of the school said, hey, listen, this is a pattern that we don't like. This is not just happening to know what's happening to other kids. And she was an amazing person though. Like she like, I hate to quantify people, but I put them in boxes of get it and don't get it. And she got, she got it.
Yeah.
And so she,
get it factor, yeah.
she basically said, hey, this is, he's a repeat offender. This might be his first time with Noah, but this is not with the other people. And I've got to come down heavy. And so his, and they were little, they were like, I would say fourth grade, fifth grade. Oh, wow. And she says, so like, this is what we're going to do. But I think that Noah should know what, you know, what the punishment is going to be, where none of the junior high has ever told me what a punishment was going to be. Like, it's just been, hey, you can't ask about it, but we'll tell you what you could do as the bullied person, which I think that information is not very fair to have this happen to your kid and not have, like, you know, to know what the end result was. But, it wasn't an email, but she did say to me, she said, so the punishment was, hey, this kid cannot eat in the lunchroom with anybody. He has to eat alone at an isolated table or in the office for this period of time. Let's say 3 weeks. I don't know exactly what it was. And so she called Noah in and she said, I just wanted to share this story with you because I think it's pretty like telling on who your child is. She says, so I told him, hey, this is what we've decided to do. This person is going to have to not be able to be in the lunchroom. So you feel safe in the lunchroom for 3 weeks and they will need to eat alone. And, you know, basically you evaluate their behavior if they want to be in, you know, to eat with others. And Noah goes, that is so long. Aww. That is so, so long. And he's like, is there a way that you could just make it like only this time? And she said, unfortunately, Noah, like I have to prove a point and, this is beyond you. Like this has been, she says, but I can do this. I can meet you halfway. And she says, but I will do this. I'm going to tell that person that you pled for him on his behalf. Right. And I just thought that that was such an amazing lesson, like on both sides, just thinking like, hey, your accuser has let you only have 2 weeks versus the 4 weeks or whatever. And I thought that was so cool of her to involve all parties. And that I had no, like, this was a Noah decision, not my decision. I would have had to sit in there for 4 weeks. But like, that's more than, and he really is that way. And even when like his brother would like get in trouble or whatever, like they were in a fight or whatever, he would be so sad if the brother got in trouble, you know, like he just doesn't, he hates to see people hurt and to struggle. And so it's very like, I would love to say that that's, you know, being raised from a great family or whatever, but that's, he came with those things. That's who he is. And it's just amazing to me that these individuals, that given their set of circumstances can rise above it. And he, oftentimes people will say, oh, that's just a great thing that you've done. And I think it's oftentimes said that like as a nobility factor in adoptive parents. Oh, it's just the opposite. He has taught me more about patience, understanding, forgiveness, living in the moment. Like the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
I've been this part of his life and he's been this part of my life. And I think that like, it's just, I know that there's many, many adoptive parents that think the same way and feel the same way.
Yeah. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What really.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's, you know, crazy because I think about, I mean, I don't know. I know different offense. I don't know if we want to go back to that, but I'm surprised because I had a child who was bullied in seventh grade and had some pretty derogatory things said. And I was in contact with them and they said, we're going to give this kid a warning. And if it happens again, he's suspended. So I'm just a little surprised that you haven't, you know, I mean, and I don't know if it's the district or maybe what they categorize like levels of offenses or whatever, but I would think that like, I can understand giving kids warnings.
Warnings,
like,
yeah. People make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I think they're separate individuals. So this person, since they have no record, they've never done this before, and this is the first time they've done it to them, then it's like, okay, yeah. We have to treat these people individually. But it's so hard on the recipient's factors. Like, well, yeah. It might be the first offense from this person, but it's the same offense to me over and over and over again.
Over yes. And over.
That's so
yeah.
True.
Yeah.
That's yeah. And
so
how
hard.
Do you handle that? Yeah.
No, yeah.
I think part of it is being more educated. Like all of us need to be more educated with all of these things. And I think we talked about this before we started recording, like, I think, and you mentioned a little bit, like people get nervous with race. They feel like they don't want to be offensive. So then I don't know what to say. So I just won't say anything. But then, you know, it's so hard.
Then
and
nothing
you want
get yeah. solved.
Right.
Yeah. So actually, because we talked about that a little before, maybe you want to tell us a little bit of your perspective with that. Because I felt like, I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but it was really valuable. I thought
here it's so interesting because you learn a lot from little kids. So my oldest granddaughter, she had a little friend at school and she said, I said, well, tell me about this, your friend. What, like, tell me about her. And she says, well, she's a Noah. And she, and she used that as like her description, like, oh, your friend mm-hmm. is black. And in all innocence, she meant no malice by yeah. any of that. She's yeah. just like, oh, well, she's a Noah. And then she like, whatever. And so I think that I tend to try to put people in the same category as I would Coco. I believe that they do not mean to wound. They don't. And jargons change and like verbiage and language change, where back in my mom and dad's era, it was appropriate. I'm sure that the actual people that they called people colored people. They did not like that. They've never liked that, but it was better than the alternative, which was with the hard R. Right? Yeah. So they are like, okay, this is better. We'll take this, but it's still not cool. Well, I know back in my mom and dad's day, if they would have said, oh, we have a black family that lives next to us, they would have just, well, that was offensive. Like that was offensive at that time. Right. But now that is a preferred verbiage. Mm-hmm. And I really do like, I just imagine myself being in another country. Okay. I don't know the language. I don't know what all I know is about that culture is the food. And so I've always related to this food by calling it this food, you know, like whatever culture it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
Italian food
or Hispanic food or Mexican food. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I'm thinking like, is that right? In my mind, I'm thinking like, am I offending you? If I, you know, if I call it Mexican food and you're like, it's called Mexican food. Okay. Like,
really,
but I really am. Yeah. I'm very much, I don't want to offend anybody. I really do think that a lot of people are like that. I think they're worried about what they're saying. And when you're worried, you tend to say all the wrong things and then you try to overcorrect,
yes, exactly.
Right? You try to overcorrect all the other stuff. And here's a really good analogy. And it's like, I've seen this. So let's say you're at the playground. And your child's the only child that's black. And there's three other kids, white kids, that are at the playground. All of them, including yours, is throwing sand. All of them are throwing sand. The mom steps in and she talks to your child. And you think, well, there was three other kids. Mine stood out. Mine stood out. And so I don't even think people know they do it. I really, really don't. Like, I think that it's just like, oh, my eye saw one that was different than the other. And so I called that one out. I wasn't even meaning to do that. Like, so instead of collectively, like addressing this as a group, I did that and like called this person out. I don't, and I try to not take ill intent for a lot of people. And like, you know, if they're vying for the same job or they're whatever, I really do believe people are trying to do the best they can until they don't. And they don't do it. And then my ability to sympathize or try to give benefit of the doubt dwindles. Because if you are not like actively trying, but here's what I've learned. Hey, what's the right thing to say here? Can you help me? Like, I don't know what to say. Like, do you like to be called like disabled. What do you want me to call you? Like, I don't know what to do, but I want to be right. I want to not offend.
Right.
I think that is an appropriate way to start a conversation. And you're not going to know until you ask. I feel like that, like, that is a lot of things. And there's been a lot of people that, like, they skirt around the thing and then they talk behind the back. You've seen this in groups, and where I go right to the person, I go right to the source and say, hey, listen, what happened here? Like, what can we do? And it's, and a lot of people, believe it or not, that they don't like that. They don't want, it's because it's, it puts them at a, like, they are so vulnerable. They don't know. And they just, like, they don't dare say, I don't know. I don't know. And I've gotten so comfortable with saying, I don't know, that it's almost becoming like, okay, well, you got to give us a different answer here. But I think that, like, it's okay to say you don't know, but then try to seek to understand and to know.
Yeah.
It's like the saying, when you know better, you do better.
Yeah. I thought about a couple times when you were talking, because I think that's so important.
Yeah.
I like giving people the benefit of the doubt too, that they didn't mean to hurt.
For sure. Didn't mean to, like, offend. And I don't think they do. Honestly, I really don't think they do. But when you do it one time, okay. Mm-hmm. But when you do it and you do it, it, and it all is about intention, right? If you do and say things to wound, it totally changes the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know if you would agree with this, because maybe I'm curious what your perspective is. So I'm thinking back to the playground example that you gave us, and I totally agree with you. And I think you're very, like, generous to just assume that they, because I think you're probably right. Like, they see the different kid, and for some reason our eyes are drawn to what's different, and they, but do you think that that's why maybe it's important that we try to take it a step further and maybe be like, you got to stop yourself before. And then it's important to notice the difference before. How do I,
Before, I know exactly,
do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then maybe notice your bias, or not even notice your bias, but notice your, before, because then you don't, because I'm thinking about Noah, like, if that was him, okay, so here's another repeat, not infraction, but what would you call it? He's already experienced all these, and now he's getting blamed at the playground when he's already had all these other things. So, like, what can we do as the people in society or at the playground or whatever to stop ourselves before, even though you're giving us the generous benefit of the doubt?
Right.
How do we, you know, maybe stop that from happening, whether it's in an innocent way or a non-innocent, where the kids that are calling them actual names are hearing that somewhere too.
Right. So are they hearing it? Are they hearing it from home? Are
yeah.
They
there's an ignorant home? Problem maybe, yeah. But then there's also more of a malicious problem. So I don't know if I'm making sense.
You make perfect sense. So here, in the best way that I could answer this.
Okay.
Your question is so, like, loaded, especially where we are, where we are in our current state in the United States of America, because you are looking at people that, like, let's say 20 applicants vie for the same scholarship. And let's say that we are not looking at anything but grades, work, effort, resume. We have no idea what the color is on this person. We're taking it only at resume. I think that that's a conversation to be had. That's like with that, but we're not doing that. We are basically creating there is no medical practice that we've ever been to where it doesn't ask your race. There is not anything that we do, an application job anyway, otherwise, that doesn't ask my race. Why? And it's, so you can go even to, I have so many Black friends that are like, listen, like, you may not think that it affects this, this, and this, but I've watched generations and generations and generations of getting denied loans, of getting, not getting things, not getting, you know, and there's a really profound, and this is a little harsh and I guess earmuffs, but this is the best way for me to describe what it looks like on a higher level than the playground. So I don't know if you guys have ever read the book, A Time to Kill. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at the very end, Matthew McConaughey is in front of a jury, and he in detail explains the crime. He says, I want you to really quickly listen to this crime. Close your eyes. This is what happened. He walks through, like, terrible details. He says, now I want you to pause for just a moment and pretend that that little girl was white. Would this be a different trial? Yeah, it would. It would have been a different trial. So is this the case everywhere? No. it's not the case everywhere. I believe that it's there are some little there's these little things that happen, and nobody. I was at a lacrosse game, and I'm not kidding. This is really what happened. We were my oldest son was playing. We were on a field, and the other team was, when I say bad sportsmen, like just really bad. And people get really caught up on referees, and they get caught up on all this stuff. But the other team was playing low. They were making really like cheap shots, all of these things. And it started to get to where it's like, hey, we're going to have some kids injured here. Like they're pushing this a little bit too far. And when you're in lacrosse, everybody sits on the same side. So you literally might be right next to an opponent that is your like the, you know, they're playing against him, and it's awkward. You're just like, get him. And you're like, no offense. Is that your kid? He's cute. Anyway, like you're trying to be for your kids, but we were standing and we were kind of in a line, and I actually was next to, a judge that I know very well. And he, you know, so it was my husband and I were standing. Noah was on my very left side. So you couldn't see him if you were looking down a line of people, but we were standing, we weren't sitting on the chair. So we were like in a row behind them. And, like they were getting carded, like one got thrown out, one of their kids got thrown out. And finally one of the parents started in, like, you're like, quit being prejudiced, quit, like, just because they're not white doesn't mean they can't play, or like some really like went off the hook with that, you know? Mm-hmm. And they just kept on. And I'm like, finally I said, knock it off. I go, they're playing cheap. They're getting, you know, the ref is noticing the cheapness. Someone's going to get hurt. Knock it off. And he goes, like, you would ever know what that looks like to be a different color. And I stepped back. Mm. And they saw Noah. They shut up real fast. Mm. Like, I will never know what it is to be black. Like I've told everybody that I know, I don't know what it's like, but I do know what it's like to love someone that is black. And I've watched it in people being amazing individuals and being just not very good individuals. So like, and the other day, what's funny is I ran into this judge like years later. My son has been graduated for quite a while. And he says, I will never in my life forget that moment. Mm. Because it was just one of those people like we say these things, we don't realize even what we're saying. We want to win, right? Like at the end of the day, we want to win, and we want to get the last word, and we want to be all this stuff. But we don't realize that these words are so critical. Someone's always watching, and someone's always listening to you in the good moments and in the bad moments. And I don't want to be judged like on Ted Lasso. It's my favorite part of it. Oh. He says, please, I don't want to be judged on my worst day. I don't want to be judged on my worst day. And I have to like see that with people that make mistakes. And if you are truly, truly like sorry for what you did, I'll forgive you, and for sure he will forgive you. And so I think that's been the biggest lesson. It kind of reminds me of a Jenga thing. You can keep putting those Jenga pieces on, forgive, 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 forgive. And one day it might be the smallest thing that happens, but they pull that Jenga piece and it all just piles down and you lose your mind. You lose it. Like, and I did that one day, the last time that the vice principal called, I lost it. That was my Jenga piece. And this is the thing, is like in perception, two teachers, two administration were like, they're like, oh, she's that mom. She's that crazy mom that it's just, you're like, no, I'm just a mom of this kid that this has happened. But you automatically get, you know how people like really quickly put you in a Karen box? Oh, she's a Karen. And you're like, actually, you just ran over my foot. It hurt. I didn't like it. Yeah. Like, call me whatever you want. But I, you know, and so I feel like that is a little bit of a box that you risk in being an advocate. Mm-hmm. But it's a risk I'm willing to take. I'm not here in school to be the administrator's friend. I'm just not. Like, I want to work with you, but if you're saying that I'm just going to lay down and not say anything, I guess we will not be friends.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, everything you said is great, and I feel like Ted Lasso, we can learn a lot of life lessons from that show.
It is the best. Like, if I,
but I love that. Yeah. No one wants to be judged on the worst day, because we all make mistakes.
For sure.
We all want to go back to the when we know better, do better, and we want to give people the benefit of the doubt. We want to be curious. We want to be, you know, all these things we can, I don't know. It's amazing. That yeah. show.
Yes, sure. I loved it.
Yeah, that was really good.
I do worry. I'm going to tell, like, I'm going to leave with this. I do worry because you're going to have mothers of all race, religion, creed, every single thing that watches this. Like, you don't know who's going to watch this. And I will be judged today for what I said. Just know it's going to happen.
So we just were the other day for
something we said on the podcast. And we said we can't please everyone, and we're just doing what we were just talking about. Yeah, when we know better, we do better, and that's what we're trying to learn with.
And so I am going to say that disclaimer. I know that you're not going to agree with me wholeheartedly, and we are not talking politics. We are not talking religion. We are not. We're talking human. We're talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been my human experience raising a black son. My experience, not your experience, not anybody else's experience. Yeah. So I'm going to say the wrong things, but I can only base this on where, like, people ask me all the time, would you consider yourself an optimist? No way. Would you consider yourself a pessimist? No way. I'm a realist. I can only judge on what I've come through and what I've walked through, and I can try to do better. I fall back sometimes, and I have anger issues that frustrate me, but it is part of my human experience. And I really am doing the very, very best I can raising this kid. And I am grateful that somebody has, like, allowed me to do that. Like, I feel sometimes not worthy of doing that because I don't know what I'm doing. A lot of the times I feel like, am I doing worse harm for him? Like, am I doing, like, would he have been better in a black family? And you know what? He wouldn't have, because it doesn't matter. The color didn't matter to me. And it won't ever matter to me. It's like, I feel like I was meant to be that kid's mom, and I'm doing the very, very best I can. And he's doing the very, very best he can. And all I expect is others to do the same. That's it. That's the end.
Yeah. I love it. That's so good. Yeah. She has to run, but we just have a wrap up question. Okay. So I'll stay for just a minute because she's got to take her son to a doctor's appointment. And I would be late,
but it's a doctor's appointment we've had for like 3 months. You get that. But I love talking to you so much. And thank you.
Same. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'll wrap up with you really quick because Lindsay's got to go. But we've loved everything you've shared, and it's been super informative. And I love how you just kind of wrapped it up, because it's so true. Like, people might be offended by something you have said because that's just life. It just happens. Not everybody agrees, but you put it perfectly, just that you're, you care about humans, and you're a realist, and you're just trying your best because you love your son. And I can tell you just love people. Like, you love community and people, and you want to be a good person. So thank you for all
that. You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Like, seriously, like, I've been nervous about this for this very reason. Like we talked about earlier, talking about this, we are so worried about offending somebody. I'm no different. Mm-hmm. And I'm a mom, you know, like I am no different, but I really do. I really feel like if we can choose to have a conversation and try to understand where the other person was coming from, I promise we will walk away in less offense than if we would have just tried to let it figure itself out.
So true. So true. I love that. All right. Well, at the end of our podcast, we always ask how you find beauty in life going through your transitions.
Oh, I really do. I'm going to go back. Like, you're like thinking, gosh, she's a Ted Lasso fan, that girl. But
I am. So you're all good.
But I do love that the Walt Whitman quote, and I'm going to massacre it. Mm-hmm. But basically, if you live your life like trying to seek understanding rather than judgment, you will have a far better outcome.
Yeah, I think that's come up on our podcast a lot, you know, just being more, if you're curious, then you're not going to be judgmental. And you can find beauty in that with anybody. And I think that's part of the reason why we even wanted to do this podcast, is to share people's stories. Because once you've heard their story, it's really hard not to like love people and understand them. Yeah. So if you're curious about humans, then you see the beauty in everyone.
And I think what I'm reminded of is that in hearing different people's stories, I've got to meet a lot of women, and I've seen people like do just like amazing things with the like adversities they've been given. And I had a really, really good mentor in both my parents, my mom and my dad. My dad, I never knew him to walk ever, yet alone coach a football team, yet alone send these kids to college on academic and athletic scholarships. And then to watch my mom carry every single thing. I had really, really good mentors. And recently I just shared about one of mine, she was a coach that I had in volleyball, and she taught me more in wanting to work and do better as a human being. Probably as much, if not more, than they did, because she was somebody that I wanted to work hard for and play hard for. And I wasn't tall. I was probably mediocre at best, but I became a really, really good player with my, like, my, you know, obstacles. And the whole time that I played.
Thank you so
for
much
her,
for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation and would love if you subscribe to the podcast and follow along as we continue hearing more inspiring stories.
It's the least I can
You can
do
also follow
people.
Us on Instagram at Beautiful Shifts Podcast. Where we will post updates with our latest interviews.
We'd like to thank the band By the Lion for giving us permission to use their beautiful song Move Along for our podcast.
Well, thank you for
having me. Take a minute to listen to the song
and
the lyrics.
Again, I hope that this is well received. I really, really do. I think that if we could have these conversations, I believe that it comes from home. A lot of good and bad comes from home. If we can just open up this dialogue, I think that we could do so much more.
I
agree.
And begin to understand where to go. Now it's time.
Well, thank you so much. It was so nice meeting you. I love what you're doing.
Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. Feel the strength right in my bones. All I want is to believe life is my own. Life is my own. I'll start again, my mind is free now. I can feel the truth in me. I'll take a chance, I won't be wrong. Yes, now it's time to move along. Now it's time.